I remember when we first started this whole podcast thing, we just came up with the name God Journey. Some people didn't like it. I think it's perfect. This is not about me. This is not my journey. I am a supporting actor in a greater drama that's going on. This is about him.
Thinking outside the box isn't about whether you go to a meeting or not. It's about breaking free of the obligations of religious performance and living in the adventure of a relationship with God as our Father.
Two real guys talking about life, that's a good tagline.
Slinging freedom all over the place and making no apologies, this is The God Journey.
Well, I'm Brad Cummings.
And I'm Wayne Jacobson. And welcome to The God Journey.
Woohoo!
Wow, back here again.
We got a conflicted summer, dude.
Well, you obviously didn't schedule your schedule well.
I didn't?
No.
It's my fault?
You're gone when I'm here, and I'm gone when you're here, and...
Well, that kind of leaves somebody manning the fort, maybe.
But I post my schedule online, so I'm figuring this is your fault, since I couldn't work around your schedule. How about
that? It's my fault.
Anyway, yeah, I'm off to England next week, so...
What are you doing in England?
Sarah and I are hopping around, around the southern and western part of outside London, down by the coast, hanging out with various groups of people.
Who are you hopping with and why are you hopping?
Well, remember some of the ladies we met in Nashville that flew over from England?
Yes.
We're hanging out with their fellowship, which has kind of, over the last couple of years, deconstructed itself. And they've gone from being a normal, established congregation to more of a relational kind of community. And they're just wanting some encouragement and help and somebody to throw some questions at. So I'm going to spend a little time in that group of folks.
Cool.
And then I'm going up to Suffolk, which is northeast. I guess quite a bit of travel to get up there for a couple of days, hang out with another group. And I'm not sure what they're going through. We have not met them yet. And then it's back down to Dorset, Wimborne area, where a group of Christians from kind of all over Europe are getting together, kind of similar to what we did in Ireland a couple of years ago, just hanging out for a few days and sharing life together. So we're doing that.
Okay. Pretend there's some new listeners, because I know we get a bunch of those. Why do you travel the country and the world, and how do you decide where to go, and who are these people up in Suffolk that you've never met that you're going to go see? That's weird.
Well, I don't want to sound trite about it, but I only do the things I see my father doing. I only say the things. I mean, I wish that were true. I trust the nudges. I mean, I've got 100 invitations sitting here on my desk to go various places, and there's just times when things kind of come together. And as part of that trip, I've been talking about with the group in walking for quite a while about coming with those gals that came over to Nashville and spend some time with them. And this retreat thing was coming together there at the same time frame. And then there had been other groups I'd heard from recently just saying, hey, if you're ever in England, we'd love for you to come visit. So I'm one of those guys that walks off airplanes or meets at a car stop somewhere and transfers cars and gets in with people I've only met on the internet and hope it's not a horrible experience.
Wow.
And most of the time, I've only had two bad experiences in 15 years of doing this, where you get there and go, yeah, I wish I hadn't done this. And if you're listening to this podcast, you're not one of those two groups. So don't have to worry about, I wonder if he's talking about us. I'm not talking about you. The people that I would have regretted being with, that was pre-podcast days, and either they didn't have a clue who I was, or they were trying to use me to make their group look different than their group really was. So
how do you see the father use? Because, I mean, you're just off in Kenya. You went with a hairdresser guy.
Yeah, well, watch it. Again, let's be careful.
I'm not trying to be cheeky there. But yeah, I am. But
he's a gardener guy, too. He has one of the most beautiful gardens.
Awesome. I'm a former gardener guy.
He doesn't do it for trade, but the gardens around his house. He lives on this fairly small lot in the St. Louis neighborhood. But that lot
is... He got the plants there, too.
Plants and trees and he puts photos up all the time. I mean, on Facebook.
That's awesome.
So yeah, he's quite a gift that way. Someday he wants to combine both. He wants to have a hairdressing salon and retreat center. People can kind of come and renew both their head and their heart. And I hope he gets to do it someday. I think it'd be pretty cool. So there's meditation areas out in the little garden and
awesome.
Yeah, be pretty cool.
I'm not meaning to be, but who in the world? What do you perceive God asking you to do? I mean, you travel the world and you go talk to people. For some folks, that's different. What?
Well,
they go, like, who are you and why do you do that?
Well, as people that have read things I've written or listened to this podcast or heard audio on my website or with transition series, there's a lot of them, and they're going, these are the things we want to explore. Can we process some of this with you? And I get more of those than I can go to, and I never tell people no. I just say, you know, let's pray about this. If God puts a time together, let's go do it. If he doesn't put a time together, maybe it doesn't happen. But I really wait for that nudging to go. They're all different. I don't know that I go with a specific agenda in mind. I just go hang out with people. Sometimes it's teaching. Sometimes it's just a conversation, and we'll see what it is when I get there.
And that's what you see God has given you to do.
I don't know that I can say that. I can. Okay. I used to have my 5-year plans and my ultimate mission and vision and what God's called me to do. I really don't. I really now just live inside of, I think this is next. I think this is what's on my heart, whether it's to write another book, whether it's to work on another project with someone else, whether it's to travel somewhere. It really is what's next. What's before me? And are you asking me to do this, God, or not? I have a lot of things I would love to do that I'm not doing because I don't sense in God's heart that either that's something he has for me or that it's something he has for me now.
Okay.
So I let it wait. So I don't have a big overriding vision for my life at the moment. I used to, and it didn't work.
Do you have a sense of defined mission? Because for so many people, they're going like, what? I don't understand. I mean, I have a job. What in the world? I mean, this is a completely different. This is like another planet.
No, I don't know that it's all that different from what a lot of writers do or itinerant speakers. I mean, other than I'm not doing the dog and pony circuit. I mean, I don't go to banquets and, you know, the big suit. I get invited.
You're not looking for speaking gigs.
I get invited to a lot of that. I turn it all down. I mean, rarely will I go be at a conference that's, you know, trying to get a bunch of guys in there to draw a crowd or gals. I'm not into that.
Because?
I'd do a banquet if I was passionate about the purpose of it, but I wouldn't fly across the country for a one-night stand, for lack of a better term, to be the dog and pony guy up there. Well, this is Wayne Jacobson. I really think that environment is the least effective environment to be in. I'd rather be in a conversation with people who know me just as a regular Joe, who don't know me as the author of X, Y, or Z, but here's Wayne, a brother on a journey.
There's a whole industry that is trying to be those people.
I get tried to be pushed into that all the time. I just turn it down. I just go, I'm not going there. Thank you very much.
And why is that? Why do you? There's a whole huge segment of people that is the definition of a success or fruitfulness. Why do you turn that down?
And it may be for them. I can't answer why they're doing what they're doing. I can tell you this, to fly across the country, to go into a room, to be the superstar for an evening that everybody kind of wants to groove on, and then go back to my hotel room and fly off to somewhere else, doesn't do a thing for me. Okay. And I don't think it's very effective for the people in the room. Do they get an awesome moment? Yeah, they may get an awesome moment. They may even tear up when they hear about the love of God or whatever. But have I helped them live this journey? I don't think I have. If I can spend 2 or 3 days in a conversation trying to help people process through what it means
to live loved,
yeah.
Not just inspire.
And not just lecture. I mean, I do lecture. Sometimes I do conferences. But most of the things I do very quickly, I'll say some provocative things just to say, let's have a conversation. I want to talk to you. Where are you at in this journey? And what do you see? And so, yeah. And I think the whole thing of it, somehow it's helping people learn to live loved. I don't think people know how to live loved. I think even people who talk about love and grace don't know how to live loved because it's a concept and a set of principles to them.
Right.
And they're trying to get people to live these 6 principles, which I had a great conversation last night with somebody that I've known for a number of years, called me up, driving through the area. Could I just stop and talk? We had a busy night last night with company coming. And I just felt like, yeah, sit down with him. It's going to take 10. He said, take 10 minutes, which I knew it probably wouldn't, but it was actually close to 10 minutes. Dropped by the house. We sat down, talked for a while. And he's working through something very deep in his heart that God's kind of exposing to him. And he's saying, why isn't there a book written with the 6 principles of how to do X, Y, or Z? And because there are no principles. Why? There are no principles. I go, no. The only thing, he said, but we have to do something. We have to make a choice. I said, well, yeah, the choice we make is whether we're going to remain in him or not. That, to me, the whole John 15 thing is, do you want to remain in me? I'll remain in you. and you'll bear much fruit. Apart from me, you can do nothing. So it really says, why am I trying to fix problem A over here when problem A is just the fruit of the fact that I don't know him and I don't know how to live inside of him?
So I don't think most people would define apart from me as these principles of truth I'm so enamored with. And yet I tend to think, I mean, I had the Lord say something a while back. He said, Brad, the life I'm calling you to live, you cannot live on principles.
Yeah.
This can only be the fruit and outgrowth of intimacy with me. And I'm going like, the challenge is I was taught, well, now I'll make intimacy with him a principle as opposed to,
and many
you know
people
what?
Do.
You either spend time with him and relate to him, or you spend time meditating on the principles you're trying to make work. And I don't think the two are the same.
No, most of the stuff that comes across my desk under the guise of this is intimacy and relational community in life, it's not dealing with Jesus as a real person in the event, in the moment. It's, here's Jesus taught us these things, we should do these things. And I know Jesus taught us to do some things. I do understand that. But you cannot substitute the doing of things for the knowing of him. That's bedrock to everything that changes in a life.
And I think the sad dynamic is the religious exhortations. It's seemingly all the guys that come in for the night and give me that rah-rah speech. I get this performance demand that I need to be about doing something. This should make a difference in my life. I need to go out and change the world.
Yeah.
And so there's this, I got to be doing something before. I mean, I think the amazing thing of Jesus calling the disciples is the simple task that he called them to. I'm asking you to be with me.
Follow me.
I mean, it was be with me. And I'm going like, yeah, they actually did stuff. But the call was to be with him. And I think we got a whole bunch of people that are feeling this demand, do all this stuff. And they haven't been with him so as to understand, how do I personally apply that?
It's what we talked about last week about the whole doctrine thing. People who don't understand relationship is not someone to know, get lost in doctrine. Now, you can know Christ and enjoy doctrine. That's a deal.
Yeah, no, I love theology stuff.
But when you're pushing doctrine in the absence of a relationship, and, you know, from a speaker's and that's probably the temptation of the one-night deal is, I've got to give you a principle or I've got to give you an emotional story that provokes you. But I'm not helping you live differently. This man that was here last night, you know, he's a real promise keeper guy back in the day, the promise keepers. And the promise keeper was notorious for giving, what, their 9 commitments, 9 vows of a godly man or whatever. And there's nothing wrong with any of those vows except the Pledge of Allegiance to the pastor. That one I thought was a little absurd. But being a better father, being a better husband, being a better person, the accountability thing was a bit strange, but we'll talk about that next week, I think. But the idea that I can learn a principle, make a commitment, and be a better person, the problem with that, you actually can for a week or two. You actually can come home, adopt a principle, and I'm going to come home from work early and be the father I haven't been. And after about a week and a half of doing that and saying, oh gosh, I've already done that, I'm bored with it, my job really needs me, that fades away for God. That's the problem with a principle or just a challenge to live differently is it won't endure. You can do it for a while. But unless the change comes from within, that's what Jesus is saying. It's not that you can't do anything without him. You can do a lot, but you can't bear fruit without him. It can't become real in the heart if this is not a growing relationship with him where he's transforming you from the inside. To give people, to help people experience that relationship from inside can't be done in a 1-hour speech. That's what frustrates me. It cannot be done. So 2 or 3 days, can I help people maybe get a glimpse into what? Yeah, maybe. Can I leave them fully equipped by the time I leave? No, there's no way.
No, but
you can shove them on a bit of a journey.
But I even think one of the biggest challenges is trying to talk to more than a room full of people. You get 100-some people. There's 100-some different lives.
Different stories.
And in terms of the personal application, you can derive similar principles And that's all great. But in terms of, I don't think we've helped people to realize this really is a journey between you and the Lord that will involve other people. But unless you're taking your cues from Him, I don't know what life you're living.
Right.
And I think the biggest challenge is we got all this sense of, I need to be validated. I need to perform for. I hope these people think good of me. And the competing voices of for people's time and even the application of what I'm meant to do, depending on who those people are, it's like, you know what? Until you spend enough time with Him and you know that it's Him that's nudging you, I don't know how you do this thing.
Yeah, it's like to tell people you're loved by God and you need now to live in that love. And then people go away saying, okay, God loves me. Now, I don't think He does, because the biggest points of my life when I cried out to him, He didn't show up. So I don't think
He didn't do the thing I thought was supposed to have been Him.
Exactly. He didn't do that. Or the things I've been praying for that I thought was God's vision on my heart. Winning the lottery.
Wish list. Yeah.
Winning the lottery, having a worldwide ministry. Those things haven't happened. So most people honestly don't believe they're loved. And then you've got the whole doctrinal problem of people who've gone to Scripture and keep going, God's this angry tyrant. What do you mean He loves? He doesn't love. He murders people. He throws fire down from heaven. He burns people up. And this God from the Old Testament is one scary dude. And so if you're going to help people on this journey, you can't just give them a principle that they're going to go home and be talked out of by the accuser of the brethren and the accuser of God, the enemy himself. He's going to work in our heads to say, no, you're not loved. I know Wayne said, what's easy for Wayne to say he's loved? Look at his life. He gets to travel around the world and talk to people about God. So then it gets all discounted. So if you're going to help people, you've got to somehow help them see this bridge to, one, I think what the Holy Spirit's already doing in them. I don't think I show up and then people start this journey. I think they've already been on it. I think most people that go to Christian conferences these days are incredibly hungry people spiritually. That's why they go to conferences, or why they'll go to a banquet, or why they'll go to something. I think there's a great spiritual hunger out there, even in people who frequent religious institutions. But religion doesn't satisfy it. It's that performance thing, and, I'm probably not doing enough. So when I feel in the middle of all that, like it's not working for me, it gets to be my fault. I should be doing something, but I don't know what it is I should be doing. So I'm going to run around to all these speakers or all these revivalist moments, and I'm trying to figure out what is the missing piece for me. And then that frustration just grows in people. But I think they're there and they're hungry, but how do we actually give them the tools? Give them just... And for most of them, that one guy wrote us a few years back about it took me 2 years to find the trailhead, I think is sad. I'm glad he took the 2 years. I'm glad he just said, I'm not on a trail that's working. I'm going to let Jesus pray. And maybe there's 2 years of God having to unravel stuff in his heart so he could see that trailhead.
But like, if you really read the scriptures like they are a story, 2 years to find the trailhead seems quick.
Yeah, it could be.
I mean, if you spend any time in the Old Testament, it's like you got, and Moses grew up, and it's that's a summary one verse for 40 years
blow by, yeah,
of his life.
Yeah.
And most of us would go, well, yeah, at 80, you're done. And that's when he gets called.
Yeah.
And that's when God kind of says, well, now you've kind of grown up. And I think we have this massive, weird dynamic of, I must do thus and so. And I'm thinking Jesus is kind of saying, well, not yet. Why don't you and I hang out for a while? Why don't you just grow up? You just mature and live life. And when I need you, I will make it very clear, here's what I'm asking you to do. And I don't think, I mean, like when Jesus is talking to the Pharisees and is like, you burden people up with all these, burdens and loads. You make them twice the son of hell that you are. You're just going like, wow.
Yeah, because I think running around trying to find the right principle that's going to work or the right speaker to motivate me isn't even starting to find the trailhead yet. To me, that's still looking in all the wrong places. And somehow when you let the quiet, when you just push out, I just, when I hear people who are struggling spiritually, they tell me all the books they've read trying to figure it out. And some of them are my books. Other are books I recommend. Great books. And I'm saying at some point, don't you need to just stop reading books about this and find a quiet place in your heart over time? I don't mean just take 10 minutes and go for a walk. I mean, just let 6 months, a year, 2 years go by where you're
What's
just
so
settling
wrong with
your heart in him.
10 years.
Yeah, if you have to.
Well,
I hope it doesn't.
Well, no, but I mean, think about this. If you're an eternal being, which I'm pretty sure all of us are, so what if it takes 100 years to really get to know him and to know this is that life? Is there something more important to do?
No, not for me.
No, I don't think so either. But I just think that there's so many lesser things competing. It's the tyranny of the urgent. It's that you got to do this. And it's like, I don't know. I mean, I got a whole bunch of things coming at me from left, right, and center. And I don't know how to figure them out because I can't control any of them.
Yeah.
The only way I know what to do is to kind of lay there and go like, hey, Jesus, I know you're here. I don't know what to swing at.
Yeah.
I don't know what to do.
Look at that stack of books over there. And that's only from the last couple of months. People have sent me, Wayne, would you please read my book and, you know, help me with it? Give me some ideas with it. Maybe publish it if it's self-published. And I write them back and I say, I don't know that I can. I can't. I have more books sitting there in 2 months than I'm going to read in six. So I can tell you this, I'll put it in a stack, and I walk by the stack now and then like the gal did at Barnes & Noble, and I look at it, and I go, God, is there anything here you want me to look at today? And I don't think there's some that God says, yeah, these are the ones I'm blessing, and the rest of these are garbage. I think it's simply, there's some I might be involved in, and there's some I'm not, or the projects you're getting. I don't know. I'm not making the decision by saying, yeah, this one is the one I want to give some time to. There's some that I would like to give time to, but I don't. When I pick it up, I just sense, you know, this is a nudge of, and then put it back. And I've just learned to follow that nudge. I don't know that it's always right. I'm not even advocating that. But I have learned, whether it's travel, whether it's reading, whether it's, you know, what writing projects, whether it's what business arrangements to get into, if I don't trust the nudge in my heart, I trust it more than I trust my intellect. And I certainly trust it more than I trust my wants. Because my granddaughter's hilarious. When granddaughters are supposed to do something they don't want to do, it's always, I want you to do this. I don't want to. As if I don't want to is the controlling principle of the universe. I think that's exactly what the flesh is. It's just, I either want to do this or I don't want to do that. And most people think that's the nudging. The nudging is my wants. The nudging is not my wants. My wants have led me astray in so many ways that I don't trust them anymore. And it doesn't mean when God's nudging coincides with some of my wants that I'm not euphoric. I think that's great. Hey, if those two come together, fabulous. But my assumption is that they won't always come together. And so the nudging is at a different level than just, you know, what does Wayne want? I love this section, though, from Colossians 2. This is the message. And I think it fits in with what we're talking about, because I come back and read this over, and I want to just, I want to post it on my blog, but if I do, it'd be the only blog I'd ever post, because this is all I want people to read right here. This gets to
this it. Says it all. This is the end all. This is...
Well, for people that are struggling and looking and all these, there's a key out there I don't have. Paul writes this, my counsel for you is Colossians 2. My counsel for you is simple and straightforward. Just go ahead with what you've been given. You received Christ Jesus, the Master. Now live in him. You're deeply rooted in him. You're well constructed upon him. You know your way around the faith. Now do what you've been taught. School's out. Quit studying the subject and start living it. And let your living spill over into thanksgiving. Watch out for people who try to dazzle you with big words and intellectual double talk. They want to drag you off into endless arguments that never amount to anything. They spread their ideas through the empty traditions of human beings and the empty superstitions of spirit beings. But that's not the way of Christ. Everything of God gets expressed in him, so you can see and hear him clearly. You don't need a telescope, a microscope, or a horoscope to realize the fullness of Christ, the emptiness of the universe without him. When you come to him, that fullness comes together for you too. and his power extends to everything. Entering into his fullness is not something you figure out or achieve. It's not our matter of being circumcised or keeping a long list of laws. No, you're already in, insiders, not through some secretive initiation rite, but rather through what Christ has already gone through for you, destroying the power of sin. I love that. Because you can just keep learning, keep even podcasts. My goodness, I keep listening to God. Somehow the answer is in the God Journey podcast.
I'm not thinking it is.
It's not. I can tell you clearly.
You just read
it's not.
It right there. That's the answer.
It's just you've been grounded in him. That's a work he did. You're grounded. So I'm not deeply rooted. You are deeply rooted in him. That's what he's done in you. Now, learn to live inside that. Can books be helpful? Can a podcast be encouraging? I hope so. I think people find this encouraging at times and other times very discouraging. But the ultimate is you've got to spend some time hanging out with him and let his ability to communicate with you grow.
Yeah, and I think in all of my pastoring days, one of the things that I got frustrated with is I looked at all the energy of what we were doing, and I just sat there like, so when does anyone graduate? I mean, I love the endless training. And I'll be honest, I loved theology. It's not like I didn't enjoy doing a lot of what it was that I was doing and even sharing it with, you know, creative passion. I was able to do that. But I did sit back and go like, at the end of the day, when does anyone go and actually do this? When do they graduate? When do they not need to keep coming back here and they get on with what God has given them to do? Because it seems to me, I don't know how to keep endlessly exhorting that.
It'd be like standing on a driving range, taking golf lessons until you're going to hit the perfect golf ball every shot. Then you might get to the golf course. But in fact, you never get to the golf course. The best golfers in the world don't hit every shot flawlessly. Just don't. If that's what you're waiting for. And I do think how we've set up this endless training is we never take people to the golf course. We never take people. It's like ground school when I was in pilot training as a 16-year-old. You can learn a lot about flying sitting in a classroom. But the one thing you can't learn is how to fly. You can learn navigation. You can learn instrumentation. You can learn flight characteristics of the aircraft. You can learn so much about flying, even what all the controls do. But you can't fly until you get in a plane, start the engine, and have an instructor sitting next to you going, this is what we do next.
There is no substitute to living life in him. And I sort of feel like all our endless studying or even that's like, well, I'm wanting, great, keep learning, do all that stuff. But at the end of the day, unless you've got to a place where, you know what, I can honestly say, I know him. So, do I know everything about him? No. But I can tell you, I know him. Jesus is not a stranger. I do know him. I can pick him out of a crowd. And it's taken me, I'm 43, I think. Maybe I'm 44, or I'll be 44. The reality is it's taken me that long to come to the place that when I say I know him, I got 44 years of investment of what I think that means. You know what? 20 years from now, I'm hoping that the statement, I know him, is deeper. I hope it means something even more. Because I do know him. And
can I ask you this? What helps you know him? What draws you into the moment where he's knowable?
I think more than anything else, it has been the stop listening to everybody else, honest. Because as much as I used to be one of those guys, I'd drive 100 miles to that conference, just the possibility of God being in that thing. And I derived a ton of blessing out of a lot of that. But the sense that I know him has only come out of the quiet time in which I have put my own soul without any other trappings around him. And it has been that sort of, a phrase I might use is that naked gaze of the soul is, I'm not trying to do something. I'm not trying to.
Do you have some quiet times that are just like, they don't work? Like when you just.
Oh, sure. I mean, But for, I mean, I have three children and they're growing into teenage years. Our house is full. We got two dogs and a cat. One's a puppy. And it's constant. The time at which, it's not like I can't find God in the midst of all that activity, but it's once that everyone else and all everything else is to bed, that's when I have my own time where it's, Lord, and I'm not looking for a feeling. I'm not looking to go, oh, am I right now? Can I have that sense I'm filled with it? It's more like, this is where he and I talk. This is where it's like, Lord.
I guess what I'm asking a little different than that.
Okay.
Because here's what works for me. And for me, a walk in the woods is just the best. And I don't get many walks in the woods these days. But we were up in the mountains with my folks a week or so ago. And I got to just, not a very long walk because I'm still limping on a leg, but got a chance just to be in the woods alone. For me, and I have moments like that that are very spiritually profound, and I have moments like that that are just a walk in the woods, which I would still enjoy, even if, and I know he's there, but even if there is no climactic moment. But for me, there's a place in my heart that's difficult to describe. The word I use often is surrender. It's a place in my heart where it's just, Father, what's on your heart? What? I give up. I give up trying even to make this relationship work. Do you understand what I'm saying?
Yes.
When I find that place in me, to me, that's even in the midst of a horrible failure or a brutal hurt or just having messed up something. When I get to that place of just turning my heart toward him and that surrendered, I'm not going to hide this. I'm not going to perform my way out of this. I'm not going to make you show up. I'm just going to, maybe the word relax is another one. It's that unforced rhythms of grace from Matthew 11. To me, that's what makes that alive. And I don't even know that I always control that because sometimes I try to make that happen and it's just not there. I'm not in that place.
But. Yeah. I mean, I think people's devotions and their quiet time, I think so oftentimes, unfortunately, that can be like a religious to-do list. And I found a lot of that just painfully empty. I did.
Yeah.
I know it was good. I know it was good for me. I mean, it's like going to the gym or taking a run. I know it's good for me. But there's a difference between going for a run and being a runner.
Yeah.
I mean, there just really is. Somebody is doing something because it's good for them. Somebody else has found life.
Yeah.
And they
and I've never found life in running, yeah, let's be clear.
No, but I mean, I think that's where it's like, you know what? I don't read the scriptures because I have to or that I'd be a good Christian if I did. I read them because they, for me, are a touchstone of a dialogue. There's life in them because they take me to a someone. I'm not just learning about him. For many years, that's all the scriptures were. They taught me about him. They were my substitute for him. And they were the closest thing I could get. But I found a way into going how to make that into the friendship portion of, you know what? Yeah, I can hear his voice. How do you know that? There's that sense of going, it isn't my thoughts anymore. It's a deeper one. It's asking me to lay some of things down, or it's affirming those things I am not sure of.
Yeah.
And there's a sense of going, there's real relationship. And so, you know, when you ask, you know, is there ever dead times? It's like, yes, there are. But typically, that's when I am trying.
Yeah.
And I don't think God looks down like, stop trying. I mean, he doesn't ding me for it. But I just know that there's a difference between being available to him and with him versus seeking to work for him or try to get to him. It's more like, Lord, this is as far as I can go, and I'm spent. Help me.
Yeah,
Daddy.
It's like trying to make yourself sleep when you're up in the middle of the night thinking about something. It's virtually impossible. I'm going to make myself sleep. Learning to live in that space, and I like what you shared about it, because I think it's just not always. I don't only hear nudgings in quiet moments, but learning how it is that God makes himself known in those moments allows me to trust him. I just walk into a room and I'm looking at a stack of to-dos going, God, what's on your heart today? And trust what I pick up and say, yeah, that's where I'm going. So it really isn't just a life confined to the quiet moments, but learning to live in those moments with him allows us to live life with him. Just yeah. the unfolding of my circumstances and the sensing of what God has in mind and seeking to follow it the best you can. And it really is like a golf round. It's like slapping the ball. Yeah, sometimes it's right in the middle of the fairway. I love that, baby. And sometimes it's out in the woods. And you're out there going, okay, what do I do next to find my way back to the fairway?
Where did the ball go?
And sometimes you just take a mulligan, you drop it on the tee, and whack it again. Well, off to England. I hear grandchildren downstairs. I think we're going to end the podcast early, so because I know they're just here briefly and they're leaving. So blessings to y'all.
Okay.
We'll be back next week. Thank you for joining us today on The God Journey. If you'd like to participate in the conversation, you may do so at our website, thegodjourney.com.